mouth.
Word of 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 mouth. Word of mouth.
Coming up, word of mouth takes the field for a pregame show of alternative Super Bowl stories. We'll hear about legislators in Florida looking to enforce a long-ignored law requiring publicly funded stadiums to double as homeless shelters. Also, Only a Game's Doug Tribou weighs in on why the NFL has finally warmed to sideline tweets, Super Bowl hashtags, and social media mustache campaigns.
He sent out a number of tweets about Eli's hair, and in particular, he mentioned that it was, quote, layered, feathered, and very relaxed. Uh-oh, Pats, you are in trouble.
Plus, we run down the least believable last-second plays from Hollywood's forgotten football classics.
Why not pass the ball to your best receiver, only to have him shuffle it to a 500-pound man-child named Billy Bob, who will puff his way to the end zone?
I'm Brady Carlson, subbing in for Virginia Prescott. Word of mouth goes long for big ideas coming up after the news. This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Brady Carlson in for Virginia Prescott. Coming up, we'll get into the huddle with Doug Tribou of NPR's Only a Game. Later, we'll go beyond the blitz and highlight some of our favorite outlandish scenes from football movies. And we'll find out why this year's Super Bowl ad makers are going for the extra point by looking beyond TV and adding a digital touch to their high-priced spots. But first, if you don't like the thought of taxpayer money financing sports stadiums, you'll like this story out of Florida. An obscure law passed 23 years ago says that professional sports facilities built with the help of government funds must serve as homeless shelters on the nights when no events are taking place. Florida lawmakers are now attempting to use this statute to recoup huge sums of money. Is this a political Hail Mary? Talu Alarunipa is covering this story for the Miami Herald. He joins us on the line from Tallahassee. Talu, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Sports facilities are already on the minds of many Floridians, given some controversy over a $600 million deal to build a stadium for baseball's Miami Marlins. And then someone notices this law is on the books. Do we know where this whole law came from?
It's something that has changed the mood towards publicly financed stadiums in the last 5 or 6 years. And a lot of the lawmakers are starting to sour against publicly financed stadiums. And one of the lawmakers who's behind this new bill said that a lawyer dug up this statute and alerted him to it. And as soon as he found out that it existed, and this is a statute that requires some of these stadiums to house homeless people on off nights, he found out that it existed, and he decided that it would be great to file a new law to enforce it.
And that's where we are now. Two Republican lawmakers, Michael Bennett and Frank Artiles, are taking up this cause. And what is their argument to their fellow lawmakers about that new law to enforce the previous law?
Basically, this is a way for them to say that they're not in favor of publicly financed stadiums. And a lot of the stadiums that are receiving public taxpayer money are actually continuing to receive them in monthly installments over a 30-year period. So some stadiums that were built 20 years ago are still receiving payments in forms of tax credits. So this is a way for them to express that they're against taxpayer money going towards these stadiums. And a lot of the stadiums are owned by, you know, billionaire businessmen and people who are paying huge salaries to the athletes. And they're saying, you know, if we're going to be cutting from other programs and cutting the financing to sort of programs that help poor people, then we should look at cutting some of the funding to the publicly financed stadiums.
And we are talking about a fair amount of money here. I mean, since 1994, Florida has spent more than $270 million on professional sports facilities, from the arena where the Miami Heat play, where the Miami Dolphins play. And if these stadiums aren't operating as shelters, and there's no evidence that any of them are, what are the potential penalties they could face?
Well, there are a couple different penalties. The first penalty is that they would have to refund all of the money that they've received for the months when they were not acting as a homeless shelter on off nights. The second penalty is that they would have to start acting as a homeless shelter, and if they didn't, they would not continue to receive those monthly payments. And those monthly payments are about $166,000 a month for these different stadiums, which go to almost every major sports team in the state.
And what are those teams and the owners of the stadium saying about this controversy, about the legislation that's being proposed?
Well, a lot of them have been pretty silent on the issue. I think they're of the mindset that this doesn't have a very strong chance of passing, and they're saying that you know, they're not operating as homeless shelters because it just doesn't make any sense to do so. It's not practical. So I don't think that they're fearing that this is going to pass. But this does send a message to a lot of the owners of these stadiums about kind of where the public is and where lawmakers are on taxpayer-funded arenas.
Well, I was going to ask, in the past, the argument for spending public money on stadiums is that, you know, they boost the local economy. Better to keep the Marlins in Miami than let them go to another state. You know, sort of like Illinois carving out a tax break to keep Sears headquartered in the Chicago area. So is that argument just not holding up in Florida anymore?
Well, there have been a couple studies that have come out that have sort of debunked the myth of what kind of economic development can be attributed to stadiums and sports teams. And there are a lot more questions being asked about this. So I think there is that sentiment that publicly financed stadiums may not return to the investor and the taxpayer as much as originally thought.
That said, though, we may not see LeBron James have to share his locker for homeless services in the near future, though.
Right, and the public has come down on sort of two sides on this issue. On one side, a lot of people are against, you know, their taxpayer money going towards billionaire stadiums and multimillionaire athletes. But on the other hand, they like, you know, being able to go to a stadium and have a clean stadium, and they wouldn't want a situation where homeless people are in the stadiums at the same time when the stadiums are hosting events or games and that kind of thing. So for that reason, it looks like this bill may not have as much traction this year, but it definitely will send a message.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, Tulu.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Tulu Olorunipa is a reporter for the Miami Herald. You can find a link to his article on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. You're listening to Word of Mouth on NHPR. I'm Brady Carlson, in for Virginia Prescott. Vice President Al Gore used to tell a joke about himself. Al Gore is so boring, his Secret Service name is Al Gore. Well, Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney is now under Secret Service protection, and while we don't know what his code name will be, the Twitterati have been weighing in with suggestions using the hashtag RomneyCodename. And yes, conservative pundit Jonah Goldberg suggested Mitt Romney's code name should be Mitt Romney. Harsh. Quite a few of the suggestions made reference to the former Massachusetts governor's squeaky clean personality. One user suggested codename Stock Photo Dad. Another went for the religious angle, codename Mighty Mormon Power Ranger. And there were no shortage of hair jokes either. Eric White proposed Hair Force One. And several users made sure to bring up Romney's dog, the one who had to ride on top of the car on the family vacation all those years ago. Elise Foley wrote, "My vote for Romney codename goes to Seamus. Never forget." Another suggestion along the same lines, Roof Doggy Dog. Ouch.
Of the sea, back to the black Snoop Doggy Dog, monkey, yes, the dot went solo on that.
Whether it's Secret Service code names for Mitt Romney or for us or not, we hope you'll drop us a line on Twitter at Word of Mouth, all one word. Football fans, say it along with me. This telecast is copyrighted by the NFL for the private use of our audience. Any other use of this telecast or of any pictures or descriptions of the game without the NFL's consent is prohibited. The NFL is one of the most tightly controlled brands in the world, and yet pro football has come to embrace the uncontrollable sea of social media that is Twitter. Well, sort of. And that's just one of the trends we're going to be looking at today with Doug Tribou of NPR's Only a Game. He joins us from WBUR in Boston. Doug, welcome to the show.
Brady, it's great to be here, but that introduction was way more than 140 characters, so I don't know if you want to start over. Or...
I would have to retweet that, I think, in a couple of installments. You're absolutely right. All right, in the past, the NFL was better known for trying to crack down on a church group hosting a Super Bowl party than, you know, protecting the brand, not embracing the viral web. Yet this year, it's running a Road to the Super Bowl tweet tracker. What's with the change?
I think they're just recognizing that this is what their fans want, this intimate access, this direct access to players, and it's clearly a phenomenon. Twitter is at its height, and the NFL wants to tap into that power, and they can't quite control it the way they want to, but they want to make use of it outside of game time, outside of halftime. They don't want players tweeting, understandably, during the contests, but they took a huge leap forward last Sunday when they let players tweet from the sidelines during the Pro Bowl. Of course, the Pro Bowl is the one game that doesn't benefit from the NFL's Midas touch, so they need any juice they can get there. But they allowed the players to tweet from the sideline. They had one computer for the AFC, one for the NFC. You couldn't use your handheld devices. And they tried to kind of tap into this phenomenon of, you know, direct connection with the players.
All right, but this Road to the Super Bowl tracker has been running some 40 to 50 tweets a minute about the Giants and the Patriots, and I have been wondering if at least half of those were by Patriots receiver Chad Ochocinco.
It's interesting. You know, Chad Ochocinco is really a Twitter phenomenon. I mean, he has 3.2 million followers, and he is sort of the NFL, one of the NFL's ultimate showmen. You know, he's the public persona kind of guy that the NFL tries to contain, but he's been really muted this year. He's had a really bad season, 15 catches the whole year, one touchdown. It's his worst year since he was a rookie. And that seems to have translated to a mute button on his normally larger-than-life persona. And he's been tweeting, but not nearly as much as he normally does. But what's interesting in this tweet tracker is, by far, more than double of any other player, the tweets are about Ochocinco, and there's a chance he might not even get on the field during the game. So people are still tweeting about him, even though he doesn't seem to be much of a factor in the game plan for Sunday.
And at the same time that he's been sort of muting down, even if the fans are still tweeting about him, some other players have been stepping up. I'm thinking of Wes Welker, who's been jumping into the Twitter fray. He's been giving away tickets to followers. He got a lot of notice for tweeting about his mustache. What's that all about?
Well, it seems to be this trend of everybody's got to tweet their mustaches, their haircut, and then Movember, when there was an awareness campaign surrounding mustaches to deal with cancer, that all kind of rolled into one, and Welker just sprang up out of nowhere. He's only tweeted 500-plus times, and he has 305,000 followers. So he's a newbie to Twitter, but he could be a major player. He has tapered off. His last tweet was on January 25th. So I think maybe he's focused on the game, and Ochocinco maybe not so much.
And I think it's going to be interesting to see how sort of the public perception of the league plays out as these players continue to build those followings. I mean, I think of when I was growing up, you know, you'd watch pro football players, and they seemed real roughneck. You know, they'd do TV commercials, they would break stuff, they would argue with each other. And, you know, right now a lot of them are, you know, they're tweeting sort of about their personal grooming, you know, Eli Manning's hair or something like that. It's sure a lot more like the movie Mean Girls than it is Mean Joe Green.
Right. Well, and the Giants punter, Steve Weatherford, is definitely one of the proponents of the hair thing. He sent out a number of tweets about Eli's hair. And in particular, he mentioned that it was, quote, layered, feathered, and very relaxed. Uh-oh, Pats, you are in trouble.
Watch
and
out.
I found another tweet that he sent out from a team bus ride, and an unknowing Eli Manning is photographed, and you can see the back of his neck, and the tweet says, Eli has such volume. Look, you can even see a tiny baby mullet curl. So Steve Weatherford's a bit, you know, he wants to talk hair.
Tiny mullet curl. It's like a perfect hashtag, right?
Well, and Tyquan Underwood, the Patriots wide receiver, he already had a fade that looked like Kid and Play, a huge fade in his haircut. And now he's got the Patriots logo cut into the back of his hair. So hair is a hot topic in the NFL.
We're talking about some of the surprising trends we've seen in the NFL this year. Our guest is Doug Tribou of NPR's Only a Game. I wanted to talk about another oddity that we've seen this Super Bowl season, Rob Gronkowski becoming a meme. This guy's all over the place.
He is a phenomenon. Everybody wants to get gronked. That's the the trend. It is amazing to see a tight end in the NFL gather as much attention and as much notice as Rob Gronkowski has. And he had a phenomenal season. I mean, most touchdowns by a tight end ever. He is larger than life in a lot of ways, and he's larger than the average person. He's 6'6". He's massive. So he's kind of breaking the mold for the position. But that is not a position that normally dominates sort of fan chatter, and he certainly has.
And not just chatter, but he's inspired music. There's a YouTube song by a user named Uncle Poggy. Let's hear a little bit.
Who's that man, Gronkowski? If the end zone was a home, he'd have a house key. 6'6", he's never been in any danger, even though 3 years ago he was a teenager. Shopping for him must be so hard to do, cause he wears a massive size 16 shoe. He went to college in Arizona, and he calls B.B. Jones when he gets a Gronk. Who's that man?
That's Rob Gronk.
What's he gonna do?
He ain't gonna stop.
Wow. What is it about Gronkowski that would make you put these lines down on a track? Is it just that announcers and fans like to use the verb gronked?
I think that is part of it. The unusual last name definitely helps him, and he does have this sort of cult of personality going on. Famously sort of got into a flap when he was photographed with a porn star earlier in the year, and he does just have this kind of big, fun sort of attitude, and he is just a dominant force on the field this year. So I guess everybody just wants to saddle up, including amateur rappers.
And professional rappers, too. I mean, Timbaland did a Gronkowski song. We've got that, too.
I landed in second, now I'm in first. Brady throw it to me, when he went that first. No option but win, bet it all on him. My stock going up, I'm playing on 10. Level that is, I handle my biz. Playing like the greats, know the face, who it is. Like a book out of Eli, now you boys see why. I do it real B.I. like a giant run to Boston. Pull up in the Austin.
That's Timbaland with a tribute. Certainly not going to be the last one to Rob Gronkowski. Doug, before we let you go, I have one last question. Will you be on duty for only a game during the Super Bowl on Sunday? And if so, who makes the nachos and the buffalo wings? Is it you or Bill Littlefield?
We leave all the cooking up to Bill, and I get to enjoy the game with some friends I haven't seen in a long time this weekend. So I am not working, although we might be doing some tweeting, but it should be a great game, a great rematch, and I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, Doug, thanks so much, and enjoy that game.
Thanks a lot. You too, Brady.
Only a Game's Doug Tribute joined us from WBUR in Boston. You can follow his thoughts on the NFL and beyond on Twitter at Only a Game and his own feed at Doug Tribute.
The crowd, you get me high. They saying touchdown, touchdown, 87, 87. I never slumber. I got a T-Bone reppin'. It's all heaven, cause everything's going right. I'm feeling in the air, quoting, it's a winner's night. Dress tight, moves cold.
Timbaland waxing poetic about Rob Gronkowski of the New England Patriots. Personally, I miss the days where the players did the rapping, like the Super Bowl shuffle of the Chicago Bears. Coming up, a roundup of the more unbelievable football moments from pop culture. That's when Word of Mouth continues after the news.
We are the best shuffling crew, shuffling on down, doing it for you. We're so bad, we know we're good, blowing your mind like we knew we would. You know we're just strutting for fun, strutting our stuff for everyone. We're not here to start no trouble. We're just hitching to the Super Bowl shuffle.
Where they call me sweetness and I like to dance. Running the ball is like making romance. We had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl chance. Now we're not doing this because we're greedy. The Bears are doing it to feed the needy. We didn't come here to look for trouble. We just come here to do the Super Bowl shuffle. They call me Speedy Will and I'm world class. I like running but I love to get the pass.